This podcast is sponsored by Smithfield Culinary. Everyone in the industry knows that Smithfield Culinary has a full line of great, ready-to-cook, ready-to-eat products with Smithfield and Margarita. But what else is cooking? Tap into the latest culinary trends and get inspired with new recipes created by real working chefs from across the country. Bring more to the table with flavors and menu ideas your guests will savor. Visit smithfieldculinary.com or follow Smithfield Culinary on social media. Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving, a restaurant industry podcast, a product of Nation's Restaurant News and Restaurant Hospitality. I'm your host, Holly Petrie. And now it's time to introduce my two lovely co-hosts.
My name is Sam Okus, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
And I am Joanna Fantosi, senior editor with Nation's Restaurant News.
Joanna and I are here together in person.
We are indeed.
I feel so left out that I'm the lonesome one here in my cozy little bedroom. I feel like we have a misbranding opportunity here, which is directly behind you, Holly, is our corporate logo, and you've just completely blocked it. So for all those who are watching, it just looks like you're in a generic office.
The logo is me. What are you talking about? The logo is my face.
Holly, the face of a global company.
Mm-hmm. Obviously.
Obviously.
Obviously. Well, Joanna and I are in person because we're shooting some great video content that's going to be coming out.
We should talk more about our video because I think we've been creating great video and we've been putting it up on YouTube. But for those who are listening right now and who have not seen our video, Holly and Joanna, can you please tell us a little bit more about our video strategy?
Yeah, so we are shooting something called Tech Tracker today. I'm sure you've seen a few Tech Trackers come out. Joanna actually writes this column called Tech Tracker that's all about the new technology advancements in the restaurant scene as Sam eats his cinnamon roll.
But hungry. this is why I set it up for you to talk.
I'm still going to point it out. But we are we're making it a video series now. And so we are going to drop weekly videos of technology related news that Joanna and I are going to talk about. So you're going to see these really cool videos. They're really nice to look at, let me tell you.
You know who loves to do videos? Joanna. Joanna loves to be on these videos, don't you, Joanna?
Are you being sarcastic?
No, you're really, really good on the videos, but I feel like we've had to drag you just a little bit.
I come from just like a writing and reporting background, kind of more behind the scenes person, but I'm getting more used to it. Thanks for calling me out though. Much appreciated.
I said you do a really, really good job. You really do. I'm just saying, you were a little reluctant, but I think you're enjoying it now.
I think it's a good opportunity to kind of like have a more, I guess, casual conversation about what I read about in kind of a more formal style and kind of more analysis of what's going on in the tech world from NFTs to robots. Tend to be NFTs / the metaverse and robots tend to be like the top two things to talk about.
We actually just did a tech tracker video on robots. Tech tracker video on robots. So go check that out at nrn.com/tech-tracker and you'll see it right there. Very easy URL.
Also, we are also doing videos of our travels, which Holly and I were in Austin recently and did a little recap of our travels there. We'll do more of that. Point is, if you enjoy the podcast and hearing us talk, you might also like to see us talk on YouTube. So go to YouTube, Nation's Restaurant News, our YouTube page, and subscribe because we're going to be cranking those out a lot more.
Yes, our podcast is also a video podcast and we do it every single week. So you can watch us talk or eat in Sam's case every week.
Who doesn't want to watch me eat? I'm at least a polite eater. You know those people who are like, they chomp their mouth open. It's just like awful to watch. I am at least a polite eater.
Well, influencers, I feel like food influencers do say sometimes that people like to see that. Like I quasi know a food Instagrammer person. And he said that like, he kind of does that on purpose, like takes like the big bite of the burger, like kind of thing because people, I don't know, like to see that anyway. But enough about us. Let's talk about what's going on in the world.
That was a good chance for me to take a bite. That was anyway, I was thinking, how gross do I make this? But I apologize to anybody who's watching right now.
No, I will say that there is definitely a good food shot of Sam taking a real meaty bite of a Hop Dotty burger in our Austin video. So if you want to see a real big bite of a burger, definitely go check out our 5 emerging concepts in Austin video.
It was also the only bite of that burger I took. I know this is love Hop Dotty, but that was our third stop and I wasn't very hungry. So it was a good burger. Just I couldn't fit any more physically into my body.
Yes, I'm going to Boston in 2 weeks. And so if you have any recommendations of Boston-based chains, you can email me at holly.petri@informa.com. So if you own a Boston-based chain, if you know of a Boston-based chain, feel free to email me because I will be there and I will be doing the same kind of video tour. So getting my stomach ready for it as we speak.
And we define chain as 2 and above. So you don't have to have 1,000 locations to be a part of this.
We define chain as 2 and above. So we have a low bar.
Can I do a video series where I eat on camera and talk about technology and call it Bits and Bytes with a Y?
Ooh, look at that. The creative process live in front of you. I like it. Okay, sure. Next video series.
I love it. All right. Well, let's talk about the news because I'm next to Joanna's computer and I'm seeing all of her emails flood in and I am just seeing news pop up as it's happening, which is very exciting, I must say. But
live from New York.
Live from New York.
We're not allowed to say that.
Live from New York. It's an update on the RRF.
So this news literally just broke. The Restaurant Revitalization Fund replenishment, $42 billion of aid for restaurants that had initially applied for the Restaurant Revitalization Fund last year, passed in the House. And we just wrote that up. However, we're also now getting news that the Senate is not going to vote on it, which is what happened, I think, the first time around. I don't know, this bill has, versions of this bill have been bandied back and forth for the past 6 months to a year, about a year now. And so, yes, the Senate, we're getting news that the Senate is not going to vote on it until after the April recess, which might have to do with the fact that they are voting to confirm today Judge Jackson. I'm wondering if that might be why. But yes.
Yeah, it's, and while it might seem inconsequential, you know, when you blow this out to the national stage and how many businesses are struggling, you know, that's the difference between open and close for a lot of restaurants. And so, you know, it might be easy to not take into full account the severity of all this, just because this is such a national thing and you hear, oh, you know, a couple restaurants, you know, 100 restaurants, whatever, close. But yeah, I mean, remember that it's people's livelihood. It's people's jobs. It's people's dreams that are going away. So positive that this is actually does have momentum. You know, you wish you could see something happen maybe a little bit more quickly. But yeah, certainly going to be tough for some of those restaurants that are on the edge right now.
Yeah. And this $42 billion would be enough, they say, to cover every single restaurant that initially applied that didn't get it. So that's 2/3 of the, I did not memorize the number, but a lot of restaurants.
It's 2/3 of a lot of restaurants, I basically.
It's very...
2/3 of a lot. Yeah.
2/3 of a lot. Well, wasn't there some number that came out that like 10,000 restaurants closed at the beginning of the pandemic? Like it was something wild that was, I mean, that a lot of closed because of this pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers, it's interesting because at the very beginning of the pandemic, there was lots of speculation about how many would close. And there were some truly insane numbers thrown about. Like, I mean, some groups were saying that like 75% of independent restaurants could close or something like that. And it was way not the case. It was, I think I want to say in the first year it was like 14% of restaurants closed, something like that, or in calendar 2020, something along those lines. Now, again, to what I just said a bit before, that might sound like not a lot, But when you blow that out to an industry with nearly 1 million restaurants, that is a ton of restaurants mm-hmm. that did close. So anyway, it's a matter of perspective, because it is like good that not as many close as we expected, bad that any have to close at all. And so that's what all of this discussion really revolves around is, and there are people on either side, because of course there's a lot of people who don't believe that the RRF that or that the government should be stepping in to support these restaurants, which there's a valid case there, and then there's a valid case that they should. And then I think a lot of it comes back to the mess that was the application process to get these funds. In some ways, this is just trying to clean up the mess it's been all along for all those people who've mm-hmm. been waiting and had applied when things truly were really dire. And so I don't know. It's just it's messy, and hopefully people can get the funds they need, and then we can just get to a point where they don't need those funds anymore.
Right. And take this with a grain of salt, because I just want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. But I just looked up the April recess. So it seems like today is the last day that Congress will be voting on things. It's kind of a flurry of activity the past few days. And so it does kind of make sense that they're busy with the Jackson confirmation hearing. And they will be returning on, I believe, the 25th or the 26th. So it would be possibly then at the end of the month. So it's not like they're putting it off for forever.
So maybe. Fingers crossed.
Maybe. This is all speculation.
Well, something that boomed when restaurants were closed is virtual dining. And so one of our newest pieces of news this week is that Virtual Dining Concepts named a CEO, its first ever. So do we think that means that virtual dining is here to stay? The virtual dining concepts, I mean, they had Mr. Beast Burgers. They had all of these really large, entrances into the world. They had these giant pieces of news. Do we think that this means that they are officially planting their flag and saying, we're here to stay? Virtual dining is going to be the next frontier of dining. It's going to be your next fast casual, your next QSR. Virtual dining is going to be a category.
Yeah, I mean, I think regardless, yes. Virtual dining concepts being one of the leaders here. Robert Earl, as we all know, is a real character, the founder of that company, and it was a good leader for the company anyway. I think when, CEO is more symbolic of saying, now we're going to put real structure and strategy to scaling this thing, and somebody besides the face of the company needs to be in charge of, sort of casting a vision for it. And so that's what this represents. But always this category was going to be huge. And now I personally, and, I think a lot of what, the three of us certainly do and our colleagues do in media is we base a lot of sort of the health and success of certain things on how much we're hearing about it, because we can't get out there and see all of this stuff taking place in action. What we do sense is how much are we getting information from the industry about all of this. My personal sense is that the virtual brand trend has cooled just, as people go back out to physical restaurants and want to get out of their house and go have experiences. I've always thought that virtual brands would be more niche just because, it's a great idea. It's this great opportunity for operators to maximize their kitchens and have incremental revenue. However, there's always this disconnect where the customer, if you don't know what that restaurant is and you don't have that brick and mortar billboard to really understand what the concept is, there's a disconnect where the customer is not going to create any kind of relationship with that brand. So there will be some customers who are like scrolling through DoorDash and that looks good, I'll go with that. But then there's somebody more like me, myself, I'll say, I order from restaurants that I am familiar with. Even when I do third-party delivery, I'm looking for restaurants that I've had an experience at the restaurant or I've heard, from friends word of mouth that they're good. So to answer your question more succinctly, I would say, yes, this is a category that's here to stay. But my suspicion is that it really does kind of plateau to be sort of a corner of the industry that makes sense, certainly for operators and certainly for a segment of customers, probably not going to become, bigger than any individual brick and mortar category.
I definitely agree. I don't think there's enough room at the virtual table for all of these brands that kind of exploded during the pandemic and were created during the pandemic, because honestly, a lot of them have gotten poor reviews. I'm not going to call anybody out at all. But there have been, like, you know, celebrity backed brands or just ones with a lot of buzz that you actually look at the reviews and it's like, well, I was excited to order food from this celebrity or backed brand and the food was terrible. So I think that it's going to become like a sink or swim thing. I think that virtual brands do have a place, a very strong place, but I think that they have to create a name and a reputation for themselves of just being a great experience and being good tasting food. It can't just be a gimmick.
Yeah. And to that end, you know, what this news, excuse me, of virtual dining concepts in particular could represent is going in the direction of maturation, right? So like, if virtual brands can mature to a point where, you know, because it was, I mean, a lot of this was knee jerk, right? I mean, a lot of the virtual innovation was, oh no, our brick and mortars are closed or sales are down, or we got to go harder on delivery. You know, virtual brands is this new thing. Let's all jump into the space. There was a lot of just rushing into it because it was a trend, which is probably accounting for why some of the food is not great, because it just wasn't thought through like a brick and mortar restaurant concept would be. So, you know, perhaps if virtual brands can mature to where they take a step back and say, you know, instead of just rushing this all to market for the sake of the marketing element, let's take a second to actually develop some really thought through delicious food, think through the packaging, because that's a huge piece of this, and then go to market with something that is much more thought through. I think that would have to be the next step for the virtual brand category.
Yeah, one place that, so I was just talking with Alex Cantor of Next Bite for an upcoming feature on our website. So stay tuned for that. But I was talking with Alex Cantor and he was saying that there's a lot of gaming of the system that goes into virtual brands, that there's a lot of ways that you have to think about SEO to get on top of Grubhub or to get on top of DoorDash to get your brand found and the marketing that comes in terms of it. Then you have to go into like the way that they think of brands is they think of what's missing from the market. So they think of what is missing, like, or what's really good to transport. So they think of like burritos are really good to transport. So they had a breakfast burrito because that was missing from the market. So like things like that are how Next Bite at least thinks of their virtual brands. And they try to think of what's missing and almost like a real restaurant, just without the overhead.
Yep.
And I think that's what a lot of the bigger players are doing. A lot of the people who have come out of this successful and are in the stage of maturation are the brands that have been able to find holes in the market and find ways to market properly. Like Mr. Beast Burgers was marketed incredibly and it's still held up. It's still, you know, it wasn't just like a blip in the system, it's still going. And so you have to think about these things that are marketed really well, but then also are thought through well and in addition to it. And there's a lot of those that have been done well, but there's a lot that haven't been done well either. And to Joanna's point, a lot of brands just kind of slapdash thought, I need to be part of the virtual brand. And there's been a lot of issues with the way that brands have been put on platforms and the way that they've maybe lied about being a virtual brand or not being, or being brick and mortar. And there's all those issues as well. But I think that the ones that we're talking about are the big ones, the big players. Like, you know, you think of Denny's having a virtual brand, you think of IHOP having a virtual brand, those kind of big players with these Next Bites, with these virtual dining concepts. Those are the ones that like are really in the stage of maturation.
We should also add, by the way, that the CEO who was named to Virtual Dining Concepts, her name is Stephanie Sollers. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. But importantly, she came from DoorDash. And so that is going to be critical for them to really understand the ins and outs of how DoorDash and others operate so that Virtual Dining Concepts can really maximize their business through that platform.
I also love that we're seeing more women in restaurant technology and not to take Holly's job, but like
segue. Here we go.
It's a segue that mm-hmm. that I am seeing a lot of when I'm researching for a metaverse story, a big metaverse feature, and I'm seeing a lot of the metaverse experts or Web3 experts are women.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, look, and women, excuse me, in leadership of any industry category, whatever, is good to see. I couldn't describe any kind of meaning to why there are a lot of women leaders in Web3 other than to speculate that, you know, hopefully now as a society, we're at this point where we are encouraging young women to pursue whatever career path they want to. And with something that's so new like this, it's going to be more open to women in the workplace and certainly more diverse and equitable. So perhaps that's the reason why, I don't know, but it's exciting to see regardless.
And so that news that has to deal with the metaverse is that Chipotle has entered the metaverse with a very cool new game. Sorry if you can hear the sound of the rain. We are on the 22nd floor and it is pouring here in New York City.
It's
so
really terrible.
Can't hear the rain.
Hear the rain. We are high up and in a storm. So if we are a little scared.
You guys are going left and right. Is the building blowing back and forth?
So Chipotle has entered the metaverse with a really cool game. They're gamifying the metaverse. So they basically want you to create your own burrito and then it arrives at your door. So it's very, very interesting. I think it's different from how Wendy's entered the metaverse with their own restaurant. And I think I almost think there's more of a universal appeal to this Chipotle because people love playing games. And Chipotle is kind of dove into the game sphere before. They do like creating games. They like, Wendy's does too. I feel like these two players have really kind of been toggling on and off for positions in the technology field when it comes to games and gamifying their brands. But so Chipotle's game is super interesting. I think it's a great idea personally. What do you guys think?
Oh, just to clarify, unfortunately, we're not quite up to that point. So basically, you create the virtual burrito. It's sort of like it's the store is actually meant to look like a Chipotle from the 90s because it's a nod to their heritage because they opened in the 90s.
93, to be exact.
Yes. And it's supposed to look like an old school Chipotle. And you create your burrito. And if you're one of the first... I forget the number. If you're if you are one of the first, however many participants to create the burrito, then you get a free entree coupon, which you can use at Chipotle on the digital on the website or on the mobile app. But I do think we are creeping closer to that point of ordering food within the metaverse and it arrives at your door. I think that's basically going to happen imminently.
Well, that's what they eventually want the game to be. So right. That's how I'm kind of discussing it, is that their vision.
And all the technology is there to make that happen. What we're seeing is just baby steps in some ways. Well, I guess in some ways it's jumping in with two feet because everybody sees this as the future, and companies like Wendy's and Chipotle are jumping in because they see that potential. But in other ways, it's like also recognizing there's not a lot of people, not a lot of consumers in the metaverse yet. And so, you know, some of it's balancing like the tantalizing things that could become of the metaverse, which stay tuned for the May issue of NRN because Joanne is going to have a really excellent feature about all of that. But also saying like, you know, some of this has to mature, going back to what we were talking about before, to a point where you can do things like order in the metaverse and it arrive at your door. But technology is there. This is a matter of time. And it's a matter of adoption. You know, it's going back to what we've said all along about comparing it to the internet of the 90s. You know, adoption of the internet took a few years before people all had their own email addresses. You know, it was a difference of like 5 years between when the internet kind of first emerged and then you had the dot-com boom. Things move faster now. So I expect it to not be 5 years for Web3, but that's, you know, what we're seeing, those early stages. And, you know, my suggestion to everybody is just find a way to enter one way or another to get involved. You don't have to do a big game, you know, promotion, whatever, like Wendy's and Chipotle are doing, but you should find out how to own your own corner of the metaverse because you're going to have to 5-10 years from now anyway.
And speaking of baby steps, it does seem like the first step is sort of using the metaverse and Web3 as a marketing tool first. So it is basically what Wendy's and Chipotle are doing is sort of marketing tools right now before it becomes like a full-fledged, I guess, experience for loyal fans of these brands, which I guess in a way is also a marketing tool. But I think it sort of eventually is going to make the shift from marketing to loyalty, and then it just becomes like a part of your lifestyle. So right now it's just kind of like, hey, cool, I'll play this game. And then in a few years from now, it might be that you get to collect these things online, and then you can order from Chipotle or Wendy's within the metaverse and get cool experiences and things in real life.
Well, that is an awesome way to end. What a cool way to end. Joanna, why don't you tell us about who you interviewed this week? And then we can bid Sam a farewell.
Well, I
permanently. Oh. Yeah. Just have to go run an errand, but yes, I will bid. I'll be bid farewell.
So I interviewed the new CEO of Wiener Schnitzel, J.R. Gilardi, and we talked about his new position as CEO, his goals for the brand. Actually, we did talk a little bit about NFTs in the metaverse, and just kind of, I guess, what it's like to be in a family-run business, which I feel like that those are kind of rare nowadays in terms of for chains.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Joanna, for joining me here in person. It was so nice to have Yay. Somebody next to me and not just be at home alone. And thank you, Sam. We bid you farewell.
Right. Farewell.
This podcast is sponsored by Smithfield Culinary. Everyone in the industry knows that Smithfield Culinary has a full line of great, ready-to-cook, ready-to-eat products with Smithfield and Margarita. But what else is cooking? Tap into the latest culinary trends and get inspired with new recipes created by real working chefs from across the country. Bring more to the table with flavors and menu ideas your guests will savor. Visit smithfieldculinary.com or follow Smithfield Culinary on social media.
Well, first of all, congratulations on your new role.
Thank you.
So I'm curious kind of what was the first thing you wanted to kind of check off your list as the helm of Wiener Schnitzel?
So we've been having some transitions with our corporate team. Some of the members who have helped build the brand to what it is, they're aging out a little bit and retiring. And so there's a transition at the corporate level, not only with me, but with some other key management team members. And so my first objective was to kind of build that solid team and fill those slots, which we've been doing. I'm really happy with the team we've put together. And that was kind of objective one. Mm-hmm. And so now that that's going on, now we can focus on building the business.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you want to move forward with building the business?
There's a few different, I mean, obviously we'd like to maintain our same store sales increases. They've been very healthy the past 2 years. We've had positive same store sales increases for over a decade, but over the course of the pandemic, they kind of skyrocketed. And it's always that uncertainty of, well, is it going to drop? Should we budget for 6% over 2019, or are things going to stay? And what's the world going to look like? And so far they've stayed and continue to rise. We would like to maintain those as well as grow our footprint, both domestically and internationally, and build our store count up.
Mm-hmm. So what drove that same store sales growth?
You know, I think there's a lot of, over the past 10 years, we've been strategic with our marketing and the way we've positioned our product. Obviously price increase plays a role in that, but we've been very focused on looking at our transactions and making sure that those continue to rise so that it's not just a direct correlation with price. But the major spike of the past 2 years is obviously directly correlated with the pandemic. We saw a huge dip when the shelter in place mandates started to hit in early 2020. And then as soon as stimulus checks came out, we got a spike, and that spike continued and it never slowed down. Then 2021 came, we're like, okay, maybe it'll go back down, but it continued to go up. And I think we treated people as people. For example, in the beginning of the pandemic, I got 100 emails of what everyone was doing to combat COVID at their store or at their office. You know, I got an email from like Burton Snowboards on what they're doing about COVID in the Burton headquarters. And I was like, you know what, like, that's great. But as a consumer, I don't really care. And so we took a different approach as everyone's getting bombarded by these COVID emails and they're being reminded that there's a pandemic constantly. Why don't we take a different approach? And so we sent out, you know, here's a hot dog on us, you know, times are tough, enjoy one on us. And we continued that marketing approach of just giving people a little break from all the craziness going on in the world. And just, you know, food is food. There's no agenda with it. There's no political ties. We're just here to feed you. And we've taken that approach throughout the course of all of it. And I think people appreciate that, you know?
And so how many locations do you guys currently have?
It changes daily with openings and closings, but around 340.
Okay. And so you mentioned you're expanding your footprint. So what are your expansion related goals? And are there any specific markets you want to penetrate?
Yeah, well, I'll start on a domestic expansion. So we just signed a 20 unit deal in Arkansas, another one in Louisiana. We're targeting kind of that region. We also signed a multi-unit deal in Idaho. So we're branching into kind of the South Midwest regions. You know, before these deals, we had one store in Louisiana, and one in Illinois, but for all intents and purposes, our most eastern market was Texas. And so how can we strategically creep from Texas east and south, as well as to the Midwest from there? And so we're targeting those areas. I think there's a huge customer base for our product in the Midwest. We just haven't gotten there yet. And so that's a focal point for us. And then on an international side, we're in talks with a few different groups in the Middle East, as well as in South America. We think that there's a huge market, especially South America, for hot dogs, Middle East, more hamburgers and things like that. You know, hot dogs, regardless of if they have pork or not, have this halo around them out there. But luckily, we have such a large variety of products that we can tailor it to the region. But yeah.
And something I found so interesting about your business is that I feel like a family-owned business is kind of rare in the world of food service chains. So what is it like to helm that kind of a business, and kind of what makes it different?
It's definitely rare. I think it's just us and In-N-Out left. But it's an honor, to be honest. It's a huge honor to take over my family's legacy and be the person at the helm and continuing that on. It's also a ton of responsibility to preserve something that's held so tightly with the people you love. It's on a personal side, you know, it's an honor and it's a responsibility. On a work side, it has a ton of benefits because we are family owned, and so we're able, and we're relatively small, and so we're able to maneuver quickly, which I think also helped us in the pandemic with the constant changing of regulations. Is we can pivot on a dime because we don't have to go through the typical red tape that a larger organization who has a board to report to and shareholders and things like that, and have to constantly create storylines and inflate the stock price. You know, we're much more nimble.
And given your legacy and family history and everything, what are your long-term non-expansion related goals for the brand?
We would like, and I say we as a whole team, to change the perception of the hot dog. And it's a broad goal, and it's not related to our brand, but we're big believers that the hot dog has a real negative halo around it that isn't necessarily true. And so we would like to educate the population that there's not really a huge difference between, like, for example, if you go to the grocery store and you buy turkey, right? And they shave it off. Turkey doesn't come in a ball, right? It's all processed and then put into a casing, and that's how it's delivered. But for some reason, lunch meat has a better perception than a hot dog does, when in reality, it's just meat processed down and put into a shape. And so to educate the consumer on that, I think to elevate the category would elevate the brand over time and create that long-term customer base.
Mm-hmm. I get what you mean with that, because I think that that the consumer nowadays is so savvy in terms of what they're putting in their bodies, and they're constantly thinking about that. So how would you plan on kind of re-educating people about the hot dog and letting them know that, you know, it's okay to eat hot dogs?
Yeah, so what we've done is created a website called thehotdog.org, and it's specifically tailored to fit all the Google search requirements. So we put, you know, we made a video on how hot dogs are made. We put lots of fun articles on different hot dog recipes and just fun facts about hot dogs on there, things like that. And hopefully, as that website gains more traction, this is one of the ways. When you go to Google and you type in what's in a hot dog, that you get that list of, I think it's 5 questions that you can just click and get quick answers. And hopefully our website and the information we're putting out there, which is all 100% true, we'll then populate that. And that's kind of our starting point, you know, as well as continue to make good products and use in-store POP to educate people on calorie counts. Actually, one of the best things that happened to us was when California mandated calorie counts on the menu boards, because I don't think people really understood how low our products are in calories compared to our competitors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think that, for example, like hot dogs are lower in calories usually in general, depending on what, than a hamburger or pizza usually.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, you could top a hot dog with mac and cheese in Britain, really raise the calorie count, but your traditional product that we serve is much lower than the other QSR competitors.
And speaking of that changing consumer, how are you updating the brand to bring it into the future, specifically with kind of the demand for off-premises options and technology?
Yeah, so we did we started integrating third-party delivery pre-pandemic. It was an initiative, and then the pandemic obviously kind of sped that process up a little bit. So we signed on, did third-party delivery. The next step was third-party delivery integration into our POS systems. And so once we got that all streamlined and put together, then the next step from there is we built a mobile ordering platform on our website for delivery and pickup that we're trying to steer people to. From there, we're working with a lot of different things, especially with the employment or lack of employment, I should say. Today, we're looking at different solutions, from outsourcing the drive-through person to, you know, QR codes to online order at the front counter, so you can take away that front counter person. We're playing with a lot of different things. There's a few different partnerships I can't really speak to at the moment, but we're definitely looking at technology as a foundation for our future.
Yeah, and I've spoken to a couple of folks in those specific industries, or parts of the restaurant technology industry. So I can kind of see where you're headed toward there. But hearing more in the future, it seems that some of these technologies that you're interested in investing in have a lot to do with labor, which I feel like, mitigating labor, which I feel like is a lot of the focus of the restaurant industry this year.
Yeah, I completely agree, you know, and it's bittersweet to me because I never want to go 100% technology-based. I think the human connection is super important, and in a world that will be primarily based on technology, the brands that still offer that human-to-human engagement will actually have a place. And so, I want to hire people. I want people to have jobs. I want to have a fun work environment and create a good culture. But if nobody's showing up to apply, we have to start looking for outside options. And it's necessary, but it's kind of that bittersweet. It's like, I don't want to go towards automation and things like that. I'd rather keep it just hiring people, but you have to do what you have to do to stay in business these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like with the mentioning of things like the metaverse, it seems like people don't even need to be in person to experience food. And I heard that you guys are kind of looking into that.
Yeah. I just had an idea on a run. I was just thinking, and it's like, the metaverse kind of weirds me out. It freaks me out a little bit, to be honest. I'm not very familiar with it. I used to be really into video games when I was younger. I haven't played in a long time, so I'm kind of out of that realm. But in thinking about it, I was like, the world is getting digitized, and you can create this avatar and you can live your life online, but the one thing you can't do is eat. Like, you can create digital food for your avatar, but you actually still have to eat. So how could we combine the two? What if we built wiener schnitzels in these metaverse platforms where people could go in, order, and then that order automatically syncs to a third-party delivery, and then food is brought to their door? And how could you kind of seamlessly blend the two together, and whether or not they're paying and some sort of proprietary wiener schnitzel crypto coin or regular dollars, or integrate NFTs, which is still very unfamiliar to me, which I'm working on learning about. But yeah, there's a lot of change happening. It's like I don't think anybody really has a great grasp on it, and everyone's just trying things.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, there's still that balance. Like, you don't want to be entirely leaning into the off-premise technology experience.
Yeah.
You don't have any face-to-face. So I think that moving forward, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe you'll be thinking about kind of trying to strike that balance.
Absolutely. And that's what it is. I mean, you put it perfectly. It's a balance. You don't put all your chips in one area. You try to kind of integrate things that are changing in society, but maintaining your core values and business model.